content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, friends. This is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's program is supported by Coastal Credit Union Foundation. For more information on the Coastal Credit Union Foundation, you can find it at coastal24.com/foundation. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you articles of interest from Kiplinger.com and also Money.com. Our first article up is from Kiplinger.com. This article is by Aaron Bendig. 10 things you should leave out of your will, according to experts. If you're unclear about the 10 things you should leave out of your will when drafting your estate plan, check out what legal experts have to say. Everyone needs a well-thought-out estate plan, no matter their financial status. An estate plan not only dictates the distribution of your assets, but also outlines the medical care you want and how your personal affairs will be managed if you're unable to do so. Estate planning is especially important for women and single adults who often have fewer assets or support as they age. Unfortunately, many Americans underestimate the importance of estate planning. Only 24% of Americans had a will in 2025, and that's down 33% from 2022. And more than 50% of people who don't have a will say it's because they don't have enough assets, according to Caring.com's 2025 Wills and Estate Planning Study. Of those surveyed, 43% say they don't have a will, and almost 1 in 4 respondents who do have a will haven't updated it since it was first written. No one wants to think about death, especially their own. If the idea of estate planning has got you down, start with a will. It's the anchor of your estate plan and can help to avoid probate, which forces your heirs to enter a potentially lengthy and costly legal process to distribute your assets. Things you should leave out of your will. Not everything should be included in your will. Here are 10 things to leave out. Number 1, gifts or bequests to a child or other individual with special needs. It's important to be very careful when leaving assets to a person with special needs, says Melissa Weiner, senior partner with Kana Elder Law. Often that individual receives government benefits that are means tested, for example, Medicaid, Supplemental Security Income, or SSI. And leaving assets outright to them can cause them to lose their government benefits or any inheritance. If you're leaving assets to a person with special needs in your will, be sure to leave it in a supplemental needs trust. Number 2, pets and money for their care. We love our four-legged family members and often want to ensure they are looked after even if we pass before they do, says Russell Morgan, principal at Morgan Legal Group. But pets are considered property and can't be named as beneficiaries or inherit anything from a will. Morgan adds that you could earmark a certain amount of money and ask a family member to care for the pet, but once the funds are released, there is no legal obligation to follow your exact wishes. It is best to leave pets out of the will and instead set up a pet trust to ensure the well-being of your furry friend. Number 3. Non-probate assets. Your will only controls the transfer of probate assets, property or items that are solely owned by an individual at the time of their death and must go through the probate process for distribution. Non-probate assets are all assets that have a designated beneficiary, such as life insurance, 401k, brokerage accounts, IRAs, and even bank accounts that can name a beneficiary and be non-probate, says Daniel Bernard, partner at Tully Law Group. If you name someone to take a non-probate asset in your will, the problem is that the beneficiary designation will supersede your will, Bernard says. If you have the same named beneficiary on the account and in the will, this is not a problem. If the beneficiaries are different, this can cause contention and invite a challenge to your estate plan. Number four, terms that leave fixed, high, or unrealistic dollar amounts to individuals. If your estate ends up being smaller than expected, leaving a large fixed cash gift in your will could reduce what your primary beneficiaries receive, says Andrew Rosenberg, estate planning attorney at Grieve Civil Law. For example, if your will says I leave $100,000 to my friend Robert and the rest in equal shares to my children, and you wind up only having $50,000 in your estate when you pass away, your children likely won't receive anything because they are stuck with Robert's large bequest ahead of their residual distribution. It is much better to leave property in shares or percentages to your beneficiaries, which allows the flexibility in your estate to adapt to any size of a portfolio. Number five, conditional gifts. Jonathan Geserich, estate planning attorney with Texas Probate Pros, recommends not including any conditional gifts. For instance, if Anna stays married to Ben, Mary shall receive $100,000 from my assets, says Geserich. It's best to exclude conditional gifts because they can lead to complications and legal challenges and make the estate more difficult to settle. Number six, secure information. I regularly explain to clients that Social Security numbers, financial account information, and passwords to accounts should never be provided within the will itself, says Ashley Higginbotham, supervising attorney at Deming Parker. The reason is that upon death, the will is filed with the court in the state where the decedent lived. At that point, the will is a public document, whereby potential heirs and court staff may view it. Besides that, such information opens the possibility for individuals who are not otherwise authorized to access the accounts the opportunity to gain access and wipe out those accounts. If you want to ease the burden on your executor to identify your assets, debts, accounts, and passwords, consider creating a separate document for that information and safekeeping it with your will and other important documents, Higginbotham shares. If it is a separate document, it does not have to be filed like the will and could be extremely helpful to your executor. Number seven, funeral instructions. Jamie E. Wright, founder of the Wright Law Firm, warns that you shouldn't specify funeral arrangements in your will. They might not be reviewed until after the funeral. Instead, communicate your wishes directly with your loved ones prior to your passing or include them in a separate document. Number eight, guns. One category of assets I strongly recommend excluding from your will are firearms. Guns are highly regulated under both state and federal law, age restrictions, background checks, mental competency requirements, etc. For this reason, we almost always recommend using a separate gun trust or NFA trust to transfer firearms safely and legally, rather than distributing them through the will itself, says Monica Hayes, estate planning attorney and partner at DGIM Law. Number nine, disparagements to potential beneficiaries. Bernard Pardner at Truly Law Group also warns that including any disparagement to potential beneficiaries. I have represented many clients who wanted to disinherit a child and wanted to list the reason. This often causes much more hurt feelings and anger and could lead to a challenge of your will. It is much better to simply state, for the reasons best known to me, I make no provision for X. Number 10, business interest. Negrin Weiner, senior partner of Kana Elder Law, advises this advice. Passing business assets within a trust will allow for more privacy when it comes to business holdings and information. Michael Dale, vice president of investment services at Navy Federal Investment Services, agrees. Consider setting up a separate agreement for the distribution of your business assets to avoid probate and ensure a smooth transaction. Help your heirs avoid the stress of probate. Your will is a powerful tool, but it's not a catch-all for everything you've accumulated. By excluding these 10 items from your will, you'll spare your family unnecessary delays, taxes, and the headaches of probate. A clean, well-thought-out will that only deals with assets and actually need to go through probate is one of the kindest gifts you can leave your heirs. Move what doesn't belong in your will into the right tool. Trust, beneficiary designations, joint ownership, or even a separate personal property memorandum. A little extra planning now means a lot less frustration and expense later for you and your loved ones. Our next article appeared in Money.com. The unexpected factor that could be driving up your homeowner's insurance rates. This article by Martha White. You probably already know that having a low credit score means paying a higher interest rate when you buy or refinance a home. But a new working paper from the National Bureau of Economic Research, or NBER, found that there's a second category of housing expenses that are influenced by your credit score, homeowners insurance premiums. According to the researchers, a low credit score increases premiums roughly as much as it raises mortgage rates. The paper's authors analyzed data from a natural experiment that occurred when Washington State temporarily banned insurers from using credit data in setting home insurance rates. They wrote that their study suggested that lower credit borrowers pay more for reasons other than physical risk exposure. What's more, this poor credit penalty is significant. Your credit has as much of an impact on your homeowner's insurance premium as whether or not you live in a disaster-prone area. It's not entirely surprising that credit scores influence home insurance rates. Except for a handful of states that restrict the use of credit reports in insurance underwriting, most insurance companies do use that information. People with lower credit scores are more likely to file claims after sustaining damages, possibly because they have less ability to borrow money to pay for home repairs. Filing a claim may be the cheapest, if not the only way, to cover immediate unavoidable expenses, the paper noted. But the extent of the correlation between low credit scores and higher premiums took researchers by surprise. They found that insurance companies charge people with poor credit 24% more for the exact same insurance coverage as people with excellent scores. Insurance premiums are rising for all, but not equally. Homeowners around the nation have endured year after year of eye-watering rate hikes. But the pain has been more acute for those with bad credit. What's more, this financial pressure has been getting worse over the past decade. Data from ICE Mortgage Technology found that annual homeowners insurance premiums are up $149, or nearly 7% from a year ago. Ironically, this is relatively good news in that it's a smaller hike than the double-digit increases homeowners endured for the last three consecutive years. Overall, premiums have gone up by almost 70% in the last 5 years alone. The average homeowner now pays roughly $200 a month, or roughly $2,400 a year, although it's well known that homeowners in some locations pay much more. NBER determined that credit is as much a factor as location, and that rates for homeowners with poor credit have risen faster than rates for those with good credit. Researchers found that insurance accounts for a rising share of homeowners' total housing cost. This insurance burden, as the paper termed it, rose across the board from 12% in 2020 to 15% in 2024. For homeowners with low credit scores, though, that share rose faster and to a greater degree. It jumped from 17% to 24% over the same time period. Homeowners in the bottom 20% of the credit spectrum paid, on average, $550 more a year than the 20% of homeowners with the highest scores. And those increases are increasingly wreaking havoc on homeowners' budgets. As the NBER paper noted, while most homeowners have fixed-rate mortgage payments that don't change from year to year, annual insurance policy renewals force homeowners to face sticker shock and juggle their budgets accordingly on a recurring basis. Because most insurance companies today use credit scores in their underwriting, homeowners who want to lower their premiums should take steps to improve their credit and comparison shop for the best home insurance rates after raising their scores. Our next article appeared in Kiplinger.com. Kiplinger Energy Outlook: Drivers Feel the Effects of the War in Iran. The loss of roughly a tenth of the world's oil supply is already raising prices at the gas pump, with more increases to come. This article is by Jim Patterson. The cost of filling up at the gas station is mounting rapidly as the ongoing conflict in the Middle East shuts down much of the region's huge volume of oil and gas exports. The national average price of regular unleaded has risen to $3.60 per gallon. On the eve of the U.S. and Israeli airstrikes, the average price was $2.98. Barring a sudden ceasefire, retail fuel prices will keep climbing, with $4 a real possibility. Diesel fuel is rising even faster than gas, with the national average price of diesel now at $4.80 per gallon. A week ago, it was $4.17. Diesel is sure to exceed $5 on average and may challenge its all-time high of $5.82 set in June of 2022 when Russia's invasion of Ukraine roiled petroleum markets. Crude oil prices have risen from about $65 per barrel for benchmark West Texas Intermediate crude right before Operation Epic Fury commenced to $95 per barrel now. Why? Iran has responded to the U.S. and Israeli airstrikes by effectively closing the Strait of Hormuz, the narrow waterway connecting the Persian Gulf with the Indian Ocean and global markets. Normally, a fifth of global oil supply passes through the strait. Now almost none is getting through, especially after several tankers and other vessels were attacked by drones. Pipelines in the region can carry only about half of the Persian Gulf's oil to ports elsewhere, meaning the other half is basically stranded. And there is no way to make up for so much lost supply anywhere else in the world. Even the coordinated release of oil from emergency stockpiles announced by the International Energy Agency earlier this week has done little to help the market's fear of shortages. We look for WTI crude to trade above $80 per barrel while the conflict lasts and possibly exceed $100 soon. Even a quick resolution of the war wouldn't end fears of supply shortfalls, since restarting idled oil wells and resuming normal tanker traffic in the Persian Gulf will take several weeks. Some of the Middle East energy infrastructure has been hit by missiles and drones. Wells that were shut down for lack of tanks to store the stranded oil may not come back online quickly. And mines that Iran has reportedly deployed in the Persian Gulf would remain a hazard to shipping until they can be cleared. In other words, oil prices appear likely to remain high for an extended period of time. Just how high is the largest? Unknown. Some market analysts have warned of prices hitting $150 per barrel, which could do serious damage to the global economy if sustained for a while. Natural gas prices in the United States are remaining under control, fortunately for consumers. Benchmark gas futures contracts were recently trading at $3.19 per million. British thermal units, little change from where they were before the war started. Unlike Europe and Asia, which are heavily dependent on imported gas from the Middle East, America is the world's biggest gas producer and exporter. So we should remain relatively insulated from the volatility and price spikes afflicting other major gas markets. That's a relief, since natural gas is the top fuel for generating electricity in the United States, as well as the most widely used fuel for home heating. Odds are natural gas prices will remain relatively low in this country until summer, when heat waves can boost electricity demand and lead to heavy gas consumption at power plants. Well, here's an interesting article that appeared in Money.com. Trump wants to suspend the federal gas tax to lower fuel prices. Can he do that? This article by Pete Grieve. President Donald Trump said Monday that the U.S. government will suspend the federal gas tax of 18.4 cents per gallon after average prices eclipsed to $4.50 last week. We're going to take off the gas tax for a period of time. And when gas goes down, we'll let it phase back, Trump told CBS News. Such a move would be unprecedented. The Constitution gives Congress the power to tax, not the president. And Congress has never suspended the gas tax, which dates back to 1932. Trump did not say whether he intends to ask Congress to fast-track a bill or bypass the process by signing an executive order aimed at gas tax relief. But experts say the former is the only visible path. Before Trump's announcement, legislation to suspend the federal gas tax, which is charged to drivers on every gallon of gas purchased, had stalled, although Trump's remarks will almost certainly give the push new momentum, it could still be an uphill battle. Knowing that high gas prices are a political liability for the Republican Party in the midterm election year, Democrats may be reluctant to throw Trump a bone. They will likely continue to argue that the best solution to high gas prices is ending the war in Iran, given that the primary factor driving up prices is the continued blockage of the Strait of Hormuz. On the other side of the aisle, fiscally conservative Republicans may reject a gas tax suspension because it would increase the national deficit, which was $1.8 trillion last fiscal year. The Gas Prices Relief Act of 2026, which would suspend the gas tax through October the 1st, has just two Senate sponsors, Senators Mark Kelly, Democrat of Arizona, and Richard Blumenthal, Democrat, Connecticut. The House version has one sponsor, Representative Chris Pappas, Democrat, New Hampshire. On Monday, Senator Josh Hawley, Republican from Missouri, announced on X that he intends to introduce a separate piece of legislation to suspend the gas tax. He did not say exactly how his bill will differ, but it's unlikely to have an October 1 date on it, considering that Trump has repeatedly told Americans the war will be over much sooner than that. Just over 10 weeks into the Iran war, average gas prices have surged 52%, from $2.98 on February the 28th to $4.52 today, according to AAA. Filling up a typical 14-gallon tank now costs about $63.28, of which federal gas taxes comprise about $2.58. At a White House event Monday, the president predicted that Americans will see gasoline and oil drop like a rock when the conflict ends. So far, however, the war has stretched on longer than the president said it would, while gas prices have risen more than expected. Consumers paying higher prices for their commutes are losing patience. Drivers also pay more than 30 cents on average in state gas taxes, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. Trump has previously called for states to offer gas tax relief, but so far just three have, including Georgia, Indiana, and Utah. Before Georgia suspended its gas tax for 60 days, on March the 20th, gas taxes ranged from 9 cents in Alaska to nearly 71 cents per gallon, counting fees in California. With just over a week left on Georgia's suspension, it's unclear whether lawmakers will extend it or allow it to expire. And as we wrap up our episode today, here's an interesting article that appeared in the AARP magazine. There's money in that box of old cables. Before you dispose of that knot of cords, separate the treasure from the trash. You may think those old electronic cords you've been hanging on to are useless, but before you get rid of them, check to see if you can mine them for some cash. Fans of classic tech have created a market for missing cables. Well, here are a few to look at. Of course, the prices may fluctuate. Display port, that's usually black with similar to an HDMI cable. Those are selling for $5 to $150. The small computer system interface, which is an SCSI or beige or black, those go for $18 to 50 cents. A digital visual interface cord called a DVI, that goes for $5 to $45. There's an Apple 30-pin connector. $5 to $15. Nintendo cords can go from $150 to $200. Well, we're going to have to stop right there because we are now out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Please join us again next time. On behalf of the North Carolina Reading Service, this is Larry Wilson. Today's episode of Money Matters is supported by the Coastal Credit Union Foundation. For more information, visit them at coastal24.com/foundation. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Money Matters is also available as podcast at ncreadingservice.org. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.